about applications to baryon acoustic oscillations and developing a framework for bias tracers and computing. I'll show some results for 2 and 3 point correlation functions computed in this framework. So this is the outline of the talk. So first I want to go quickly about, like, through the introduction, why we do large scale structure and why is it interesting. And then I want to present this EFT framework. So basically effective field theory, how to organize the perturbations on large scales and how to systematically explore the large scales of the universe. And this can be done basically in two frameworks, Eulerian and Lagrangian. I'll try to cover both in quickly and show some advantages of Lagrangian and how it actually, what are the consequences, what are some like better, it provides some better intuition on looking of baryon acoustic oscillations. And then a later part, I'll focus on bias tracers of, for example, dark matter halos and galaxies. So basically the stuff that we actually can observe and try to develop this EFT framework for studying statistics of these kind of objects. And then later on, I just want to also mention that this framework also includes allows for inclusion of baryonic effects and non-Gaussianities. We have looked into this in a bit. Okay, so basically the standard story is that after inflation generates the initial conditions for the growth of structure of the universe, and CMB is basically the first time that we can observe such fluctuations, and we have been measuring those very successfully with Planck. And then as the universe evolves, as we proceed to lower redshifts, these structures grow due to gravity, and they create more and more nonlinear structures in the universe. And we can observe those in galaxy surveys. We can count pairs of galaxies, right? And as we go further in redshifts, structure becomes more and more nonlinear, and this hierarchy of perturbation also develops in scale. And as we proceed to small scales, right, on small scales we have very nonlinear objects like galaxies, which are really, the constraints of densities are quite huge, right? And so the goal of this talk is to focus on this intermediate regime where we think that we have hierarchy of scales, where fluctuations are in mildly nonlinear regime, where we think that we can approach to this problem perturbatively and construct some systematic effective field theory framework to study these features of asymptotically going to from large scales to smaller scales. Okay, so the motivation for studying large scale structures, it's huge. So we believe there is a lot of cosmological information that we can extract out of studying statistics of this distribution of galaxies, and this can tell us a lot about initial conditions, about early universe, about non-Gaussianities, which teaches us about inflation, and we can learn about composition of the universe, expansion history, nature of dark matter, dark energy, about neutrinos, about gravity on large scales, and possible modifications of it, and so in order to prove that this is not just a wish list, right, that there is a huge number of surveys or experiments basically undergoing and planned that will actually measure all these modes and all these statistics. And they're already measuring it, right? For example, this is already done. BOSS is quite finished almost with all the analysis, and these are all planned super big surveys that will measure a lot of galaxies and provide us with a lot of statistics and a lot of information. So basically, why is galaxy clustering so interesting? It's interesting because it measures the distribution. It provides basically the 3D information of structures. So you can measure the angles of statistics, right, of distribution of galaxies. And and you get the information about redshift. So this is more than you were able to do with say lensing and with CMB. So in principle, you expect to get more information, much more, and basically be able to constrain your cosmological parameters and learn about the early initial conditions some better way, right? More precise. So basically what you typically do in such a survey, you define the underdensity of objects, say galaxies, right, as basically some fluctuation around the mean. And then you study the statistics of these fluctuations. So basically the two-point function tells you about the probability of axis probability of finding a pair of these galaxies at certain distance, right? And then the Fourier transform of this probability is just the power spectrum. And information is decomposed and then in such correlators, right? And also the higher ones. And basically by studying this endpoint statistics, you basically collect all the information that is there. Okay. So galaxy clustering is in principle messier than doing say CMB or some previous or some other studies. And it is so because it contains a lot of physics, right? And it's first of all, you have non-linearities, basically when dark matter clusters with due to the gravity, right, that there are non-linearities, so the physics is non-linear, so harder to solve, and you need to understand these non-linearities. There are many other effects, right, that come into the game. For example, one is that you actually observe galaxies, which are just the tracer of dark matter, so you need to understand how to relate these galaxies to underlying dark matter, right? They're not a perfect tracer, so this is called a problem of biasing. You need to construct, and we will talk about that, you need to construct this link of galaxies to dark matter. So in addition to that, you have redshift space distortion effects, which are, in a sense, a blessing and a curse, right? So redshift space distortion effects are just due to the effect that you observe redshifts of these galaxies and not actual their positions, and because these galaxies are in the local potential, right? They have some peculiar velocity. So and because you're measuring redshift, this can be, there is a Doppler, additional Doppler shift due to these velocities. So you cannot exactly like allocate them, right? You cannot directly go to their position. So you have this additional velocity effects, but this can be actually good because due to that you can measure the rate of growth of structures, and this can teach you something about gravity, right? Which is nice. Then there are many other effects, right? That, for example, baryonic physics also comes into the game, which you have to take into account. So there are potential new components like radiation. For example, neutrinos, there are GR effects that as your surveys grow, you're approaching the Hubble scale and you have to, so current analysis always is based on Newtonian physics in the expanding background. So you might start to think about adding GR effects to your analysis. And there are also something that's called satellite effects, right? That you basically, the underlying assumption, the primary assumption is that in these dark matter halos, galaxies will form in the very dense regions in the centers. But in addition to that, you might have also satellite galaxies, right? It's a quite nonlinear process, so you have to take this into account. And so it's all in all, it's a lot of physical effects that you have to think about. Okay, so start with dark matter. So since we are operating inside the Hubble horizon, we think that we can describe dark matter dynamics with just classical Newtonian physics, and this is then given with a Vlasov equation, which tells you how the distribution function evolves in time. And basically the only source you have is through Poisson equation, is just basically just gravity. And then typically you can take moments of this, you're interested in moments of this Vlasov equation. This is like the zeroth moment is the density, and then you get a velocity field or momentum field. And by taking moments, you get basically the hierarchy of equations. You get a continuity equation, like the typical what you get in kinetic theory, right? And the Euler equation. And then at some point, you hope that you can truncate this hierarchy, right? And by assuming something about your velocity dispersion tensor, and in zero approximation, right, for pressureless perfect fluid, you just neglect the velocity dispersion, and this has been the way to do stuff for decades in sense of constructing the perturbative approaches. But in EFT approach, what you do then, what the philosophy is, that you just want to describe this fluid at very large scales, at long distances. And then basically you want to integrate out all the small scales. So this will enable you to describe, like, to have a controlled perturbative framework at large scales. And once you do that, once you integrate out this short modes, and this you do by, say, employing some filter, right, on your fluid equations, you get back, right, this velocity dispersion tensor, which basically now encompasses, right, it contains the feedback of small scale physics on the large scales, right, on the long modes. And now, since basically this is a function of both of short physics and long fields, and since now you have a good motivation to think that your long fields are actually small, right, and you can treat them perturbatively, you can tailor expand this stress energy tensor, and basically in some kind of a Taylor series, and then coefficients or EFT coefficients, right, will contain all the information about short scales. Then this has been done now for a couple of years already, right? This is a known result. Basically, okay, just to say something about the linear solutions, well, you start your calculations with playing the linear solution. This is just linear power spectrum that you typically get as initial conditions out of some Boltzmann codes like CAM and CLASS. And let me just say at this point, right, that it's useful also to think about this as a contribution of something like linear broadband power, and then on top of that you have some wiggles, which are basically just baryon acoustic oscillations on top of your linear solution, right? And this is basically due to the effect that in for recombination, in addition to dark matter, you have also baryons and photons in the game, and as they decouple, right, they leave a mark on the power spectrum as these wiggles. Or basically, if you look at a Fourier transform of this as a correlation function, and then at some excess probability at some scales, right, at 110 megaparsecs. So now, since this split is in principle, right, kind of arbitrary, right, you're splitting a function in two separate functions, right? You can make it more robust and impose a condition that this guy should not have any excess power. So basically you can construct moments of this power and request that they are basically zero. So in that way, the nonlinear evolution of this wiggle and non-wiggle power will have the same asymptotics. So the power at high k and low k will be the same. So this will be useful for later on, where we study how this baryon acoustic wiggles develop in time. So this is interesting because they by themselves contain a lot of information, right? They are considered as so-called standard ruler in cosmology.
So for example, yeah, for our purposes, right,
for purposes of our work, we just used two of these moments to construct the null.
Two different definitions of bigams.
Sorry?
Is this two different ways of defining bigams, or?
No. So you can impose both of these conditions at the same time.
Both
right?
At the same time.
Yeah. I mean, you can even go further, right, with different then, but this was quite enough, right? As I mean, I'll show you the results out of this. So,
where did the bigam come from?
They come from baryon acoustic oscillations, right? So in early universe, right, you have, in addition to dark matter, you have baryons and photons, right, and electrons, right, in the game. And since before recombination, right, there is pressure and they all interact. And then after recombination, photons get decoupled, right, and there is basically no more pressure, and baryons start to, or dark matter and baryons start to basically trace each other, and this leaves you this excess probability, right, in this scale over combination.
This observation is now z equals zero.
Yes, so basically since this is a linear, power spectrum, so this is a linear solution of this equation, you can just evolve them in time with this one growth rate function, right? So, and you can, in principle, of course, this is just a linear solution. This will not correspond well to observations at high k, right? Because non-linearities will act. So the main motivation of ours is basically to solve, starting from this solution, to solve how this solution perturbatively changes as you approach higher k.
So this is a measure of dark matter in the present count.
So you
have dark matter, you can hear the oscillation. If you just have baryons, you can hear the oscillations from the transfer function.
Okay.
Yeah
so this is for dark matter, yeah. So I won't go through the explicit solutions, but I'll just present the solution. If you crank this machinery now in EFT, right, and you solve consistently order by order, so for one loop, you basically get this linear solution plus one loop corrections and plus some counter term, which is basically one free coefficient, which encompasses your small scale feedback of the small scales, right, which is a free coefficient here, and then a similar kind of structurally the similar solution you can write for two loop, and then here is a comparison to the data, but actually to n body data. You can solve these equations numerically in simulations, and then you can compare your results and see how well you can do. Basically, this orange or yellowish line is the linear solution, and you see that you fail, like, depending what accuracy you want with your simulation, you fail certainly below 0.1k, and then with one loop you see that you can go a bit further, and then with two loop you can go even further. So you see that this is like a controlled way to study the dark matter clustering as you approach the nonlinear scales. So this is kind of expansion in basically in powers of k over k nonlinear, right? Where k nonlinear is some scale where nonlinearities start to be start to dominate, right? And one feature that I want to stress and that we will look later on is this IRE summation. And this is something that's the difference between this wiggly line or this dashed line and the solid lines. And this is basically the effect that, in addition to just perturbative expansion, Lagrangian approach gives you an insight to see how you can basically resum the linear displacements, right? And since this acoustic peak appears at a very large scale, right, 110 megaparsec, you're able to construct some resummation techniques to resum this linear displacements in order to fix this wiggles, right? And you see that with this IRE summation, you're really able to fix wiggles much nicer compared to simulation, right, than just by doing the Eulerian perturbation theory. So I want to also to stress now that doing the CFT expansion at a two loop, right, that there has been some recent work on this, how many parameters you need and how well you can do with K reach. And I'll just say, right, that so for example, in very recent paper, there's been if you really include all the terms and all the do all the calculations properly, right, you might need 6 bias parameters, but for a lambda CDM initial conditions, but you can argue that there is some approximate degeneracy between them, and so this line is, for example, obtained just with one, right, parameter. So this now depends how.
There's 6 parameters just for the
space. Yeah, in momentum space. Yeah, not right. That's right. So this was the claim of the last paper, but there is potentially a lot of like degeneracy.
But you said the blue line is with one parameter.
Yes, the blue line is
one additional parameter, or just one parameter.
So this is with the one parameter, right? The same one as for one.
Okay. So that you don't add any new counterterms then, because there's already one parameter at one loop, right? Which is this. Yes.
That's right. So I mean, okay, we add, so here to this blue line, it's added one, but just basically the infinite one to fix the divergence of two loop, but no finite one, right? So in principle, you always know how to do that, right? You don't need a free one. So of course, now if you add more parameters, you might do better, but then you're always in the danger of overfitting, right? So you might actually go have to include a higher order statistics to be able to constrain stuff. Okay. Okay, so we have been discussing this in terms of Eulerian framework. So let me talk a little bit about Lagrangian framework. So this is a bit of a busy slide. So I just wanted to add, just due to the, I wanted to be complete. So most of the stuff, but let me just quickly tell you what's the idea. The idea is not to now go through Vlasov equation and all the moments of it, but basically to start from the fact that this fluid elements can be described, right, and its evolution can be traced through the displacement field of each of the elements, and then once you have this displacement field, you can at every time step, right, or at every moment, you can obtain the overdensity or basically the fluctuations through the continue equation. So this is nothing but the continue equation in configuration space and momentum space. And basically the evolution of this displacement field is given just by the Newton's equation, which is sourced by gravity, right? And so you have a closed set of equations. So now this can again be out of this set of equations, you can again construct the effective field theory by doing the same story, right? By integrating out the small scales. And for that, you basically get, I mean, out of that, you get the dynamics for the long displacement field, and it's given by the similar equation as Newton's equations with an additional source term. And this additional source term basically contains the information or the feedback of the small scales, again, on your displacement, right? So the philosophy is very similar as we had in the Eulerian framework. Now we are just solving for these displacement fields. So, and then the power spectrum is given as basically as this integral over the expectation value of this delta, and I didn't write what this delta is. This is basically just the difference of the displacement field in two points. And basically, if you just do a bit of math and expand further, you can see that you can basically obtain the closed form for the order by order calculation of power spectrum where this A is basically just this combination of displacement fields. So and this, if you just linearize these equations completely, you will regain the same results as in Eulerian framework. So and this is nice. So you're basically with two framework, you kind of obtain the same results. So you're on a firm setting. But one other feature is that it's very easy to spot that you can now use this framework to resum this linear modes that we have been talking about, right? And you can construct the basically the schemes where you resum this linear displacements. And so this basically goes under the name of IR resummation, right? And so you can construct various schemes now out of this framework, right? One has been presented in this paper previously, right? So we have constructed another here, and this all basically helps you in modeling this BAO features nicely that we saw. So, okay, let us talk about BAO a bit. In order to do that, you can define a transfer functions, and basically the transfer functions are just the relative to, say, linear displacement fields, right? Displacement fields in the linear theory. And this we can define as basically cross correlations of the final fields and the linear fields divided by autocorrelation of the linear fields, the density corresponding to the linear displacements. And basically, in this way, right, this transfer function is given and you can measure it in simulations. And motivation to do that is to try to construct like a phenomenological approach to this EFT, or basically to try to develop a framework where you can kind of easily study the functional form of this EFT coefficients and try to come up with a scheme maybe that's pragmatically the optimal for use in attacking the data and trying to match the simulations, right? And so the idea would be to try to come up with a scheme that where this alpha coefficients, you need a minimal set of them and they don't depend on the scale, right? And so in 1D case, this can be, this is basically based on the work of this paper. So you can see, for example, so this is the difference between the simulations and this various schemes. And you can see that, so these lines here are various loops. And in 1D, one nice feature is that actually LPT or this Lagrangian framework gives you the full analytic solution. So just Zeldovich displacement, just the linear displacement is actually the full solution up to the shell crossing. So and then you can study just like adding the contour terms, which now have really physical meanings of adding the beyond shell crossing effects, right, to your theory. And so you can see that as you add these additional terms, right, you start to recover more and more scale. So it gives you a very, very nice physical picture of what's happening, right, in 1D. Okay. And so this is now the scheme in terms of, say, how this EFT framework would look in this in terms of this coefficients out of the transfer functions in one and two loops. And you can also construct now, and we have constructed many other like schemes that come out of this transfer functions in terms of try to study now this coefficients and as function of scales and try to determine which one would be the optimal, right? Which one would vary least in scale and try to cover as much scale as possible, right? Okay, so this is just a simple scheme to add this IR summation modes, right? And basically, if you now divide these terms, these displacements in this no wiggle and wiggle parts, as we have discussed previously, right? Now you can basically see that your power spectrum can be split into the fully non-wiggle part, which is just computed as previously, it doesn't contain wiggles. And then in addition to that, you will just have this wiggle part, which is now weighted with a non-Weigle this exponential, right? And now if you use say Laplace method to kind of solve this, because this function basically varies, it has this functional form, right? And it's just the Weigle part is peaked at this 110 megaparsecs. So you can basically just pull this guy out, right, and evaluate it at this 110 megaparsecs. And the first approximation, you get just this suppression. So this IR summation simplifies quite substantially in this picture, right? And you basically get the full IR summation scheme and given in this formula. Basically, you have this split into Weigle and no Weigle part, which we have shown is now done quite uniquely, right? And you have just this weighting with this one parameter being basically evaluated as a sum of these guys at this 110 megaparsecs. So also there's been an alternative derivation previously. Sigma is basically just the value of a sum of these two guys, and you can basically think of it as an effective zero lag displacement, or basically displacement evaluated at a point. Right?
How big is the value?
So this value is some like in linear theory it would be the sigma would be like 6 megaparsecs over h, right? And here it's slightly smaller because this is basically corresponds to 6, right? The sigma, and since you're evaluating it here, right, it's a slightly smaller. So for example, sigma squared is like 36 versus this effective one is, I don't know, 28 or something like that. okay, so this is now the basically just the summary of all these models that we have tried. And we don't need to look at all of those. It's just that basically the point would be to look at, say, two loop EFT and see that the range. So we think that these scales are unreliable due to our simulations. We had quite a small set of simulations, so we can neglect these guys and start to. So we see that basically at these scales where we think we are reliable, right? You see that with this. The EFT parameter for two loop, this one parameter, right, can be quite constant up to the scales beyond 0.2, right, or something up to 0.2. And then we can test, right, this was done on the broadband, and we can test this on the Weigles and see how well does this now fixed model do on the Weigles itself, right? So first of all, I'd like to mention that since the Weigles are, as we saw, right, the quite a linear feature, it happens on quite a large scales, even Zeldovich displacement or just the linear displacement does quite well. So, for example, this is a ratio of this Weigle due to non Weigle, and blue is basically the linear power spectrum, you can see. And then we have run simulations, basically also Weigle and non Weigle, so quite a nonlinear, so basically the full nonlinear solution. And you see that these are suppressed relative to the linear solution. And you can also, if you can spot, there is a green line, which is just Zeldovich, which captures quite well, right, these effects. So, but now if we want to look beyond that, so there is some residual. And it is quite small, but we can still measure it, and we can resolve it quite well in simulations as well. And then you can look at these residuals in different models, and you can see that, for example, this EFT, the one loop, it captures this effect quite well, right? There are also some models which we called hybrid, which is also resumming also some broadband, which was also doing quite well. So basically, this confirms that with this EFT framework, you can do that. You have kind of a parameter that you have fixed for a broadband. You do also as an almost independent test, right? Well, on the smoothing and dampening of the BO Weigles as well. So.
Yeah. Is it true that most of the sigma squared comes from linear scales? Is that one way to think about what's happening here?
Well, yeah. So yeah, as we kind of talked, right? It. So. Where was it? Yeah, so since this is like a peaked function, right, at this 110 megaparsecs, right, the contributions to this integral is quite well approximated with the value, right, at 110 megaparsecs, right. And so basically sigma is just then the sum of these values, right, at 110. So yeah, there are corrections, right, to this, like there are, like, I don't know, first derivative and maybe this two, like, drops and stuff like that. But I mean, this is done just with this approximation. It seems to work quite well, right?
Would you say this idea of reconstruction, like what is done this form to like undo the vector effect of the long wave forms, that's a pretty optimal way of getting back to the curve?
Yeah, I think this was the motivation, right? That reconstruction seems to recover quite well the wiggles, right? So yeah, this is in the sense a similar statement, right?
The original matter power spectrum from MIT and SPSS, which is smooth curve all the way to k equals 0. Now you have these wiggles with variables. But the data is, how is the data going to be accurate enough to see the wiggles?
Yeah, so I'll go to the halos, right? And actually, I have a plot of SDSS power spectrum.
They've been seen at like 10 sigma now. Right?
Yeah.
So what?
They've been seen at like 10 sigma now. VAOs have seen them. Very high sigma.
Observation.
Yeah.
Observation, yeah. They have been measured. Yeah. So, for example, yeah, in BOSS recently, right? And then SDSS. I mean, they've been measured quite with a high accuracy, right? Using them for constraining parameters as well, right?
In the early universe, you need LRGs. Z has got to be large.
Yes, yeah, so I'll have a plot later on.
Because the old data, the LRGs, it's hard to see LRGs in part 10. Those are the ones you need for small k observation. Anyway.
Okay. So let me just know that we have then went further with these BAOs, and we've just been looking at adding some. So basically, the motivation would be to if you had some, say, like monodromy models of inflation or some kind of models that add additional wiggles, right? You might hope to see that one day in the power spectrum, right? And so we have just then added by hand some additional signals to our power spectrum and try to see how well we can do with these RR schemes. And then basically for one of these models, right, where we added substantial wiggles, right, on smaller scales actually, right, you can see that even with this, our approximate model, right, you can kind of, so again, Zeldovich already does quite well on this, right, but even with a residual, right, you can do with one loop, you can do quite impressively well, right? So.
Wait, so what looks like you added the wiggles k order one?
Yeah.
The tops and the bottom only
one. What if there's wiggles for large k on the top?
So these are just added by hand, right? So these are just added for doing the experiment, whether we can actually capture. So these are added in the initial conditions, and you can see that they are, as you run gravity, they are washed out mostly by gravity, right? So simulations are kind of a dampening, but here you have some effects, right? Some additional effects. And even though Zeldovich captures a lot, right? There are some residual, which then you can look at how it's captured in, say, other models.
It doesn't matter. The transfer function consists of T for pi and T for cot dot matter. If you remove the cot dot matter, you get unit oscillations from Bessel function. Which is what you're saying for large k.
Yeah, but yeah, these are just added by hand, right? We have deliberately added this just to study them.
There's no dark matter in the galaxies. That's what you would see. Those oscillations and barriers everywhere.
Sure.
The dark matter is stopping out because of the oscillation. Supposedly.
Yeah. That's what simulations do, right? One just note that I want to quickly say. So basically, effective field theory is is describing the larger scales, right? And basically, it's perturbative approach, doing order by order calculations on these large scales, and then eventually you hit the nonlinearities, right? And you cannot go further. You're basically your KNL is the limit up to where you can go with your expansion. But there are well-known techniques like a Halo model and stuff that people have been using now for decades, right? That basically try to model smaller scales, right? And basically some kind of asymptotic modeling from smaller scales. And this historically has been shown to work relatively well on the smaller scales, but doesn't capture the large scales effects very accurately. So the hope would be to basically combine these two asymptotic approaches and try to kind of do some matching in the basically intermediate regime, right? In order to obtain basically the some kind of a solution that would be quite accurate on the wide range of scales. And in this work, we have used some simplistic model, basically, where we just used like Zeldovich power spectrum that would correspond to this two halo term and just some ansatz that can be matched to the halo model on large scales for the one halo term. And here we can see this model as a blue line, which basically models quite well the whole scales. You know? It's just a broad band, right? So it corresponds basically to one halo term, right? But it's basically some Pade ansatz polynomial, right? Or basically some Pade ansatz that you can match on the large scales to say halo model, right? Or simulations or whatever you want. So it's basically some parameterization of the one halo term.
So, I mean,
or this
so
effect.
The one halo term is just the Fourier transform of the halo profile.
That's right.
So how is your thing different from that?
Well, it doesn't really correspond to like just the Fourier transform of halo pro, because typically if you treat this as a perturbative part of the spectrum, you're capturing, right? It's basically kind of a mixing, right? With some perturbation approach, you're kind of mixing both the one halo and two halo term. So this is kind of the residual, right? On larger scales, you might argue that, yeah, this is mostly the one halo term contributions, and this will be mostly the two halo term contribution, although it's not. So this is just the first attempt, right? You can then actually go and use for this guy, right, the effective field theory, and then try to match to whatever the residual is, right, at the larger scales. So in principle, the goal is just to get the kind of the accurate match solution that's kind of valid on very very wide range of scales. And so one nice thing with this ansatz is that once you fixed your parameters, right, it has an analytic Fourier transform. So you can basically just reuse these parameters and do the correlation function, which is again then accurate, right? So this is relative to this calibrated model on wide range of scales, right?
I think what model they use on the small scales is that are you taking some mass function and profile from the literature? Like,
so we have just calibrated actually these parameters to simulations, right?
Oh, I see.
But the statement is that Halo model kind of can be used to do this stuff on the small scales.
So there's no real one. The fact that these curves agree at high k is sort of guaranteed because your feedback you just
but I mean you can basically do a step further, right? And you can actually parameterize your halo profile and then iteratively solve this integral and try to calibrate the halo profile so that it will match, right, the simulation and stuff like that. I mean, that's how the halo profile is basically. It's an ansatz, right? That you're supposed to capture.
There is some, the halo profile that you measure from individual halos doesn't necessarily fit the one that fits the power spectrum, because I guess there could be variations in profile and asymmetries and things like that.
Sure, sure. But I mean, yeah, this has been studied quite substantially, right?
What happens with the wiggles?
Oh, so this is relative to Zeldovich. So Zeldovich takes a lot of the wiggles out already. But you can see that there is a residual that is captured by this EFT, for example, right? There is tiny wiggles here that are captured by the EFT, but are not captured just with this model, because this doesn't capture additional wiggles, just it has only wiggles in the Zeldovich.
How can you see the wiggles with that teeth?
Well, I mean, they are in the simulations, right?
These are simulations.
These are simulations, yeah.
So, I just another question. So, can you tell which one is doing better? I cannot but obviously, a large K, the Halo model is doing better because EFT goes up. But is that true that the small K, EFT is doing better?
So, I mean, maybe, you could not tell from this data here, right? But I mean, okay, from this region, you could say that EFT is kind of capturing the wiggles as well, right? The residual wiggles here. But I mean, we know that the EFT from the other sets of data at low K is capturing the right functional form. And we would not expect Zeldovich to capture the low K quite precisely, because we know there are additional non-linearities, right?
But then when you add the one Halo term, that probably helps a little bit, right?
Well, it helps a little bit, but it's an ansatz, right, which was more motivated to capture this stuff. But then, so this is just some simple compensation ansatz that we have added, right? It should not, I mean, we don't believe that we have...
Does that actually show the comparison with the lower plots? Do they compare like EFT with Halo model or?
So there is no EFT right here. So it's just basically the blue line,
okay.
And this is just some very small number of parameters. And then if you add a couple of more, right? Okay. So let me. I have very little time. Let me talk about the biasing, and basically. Okay, no. So galaxies form in a very, so if you have like oscillations of dark matter, galaxies will form in the just very dense peaks of it, and then you can actually measure, right, the so this is a tech mark from 2006, right? You can measure this very old data. You can measure this galaxy power spectrum. So this is a main sample and LRGs, right? And you will see that there is a compared to linear power spectrum, right, or compared to just dark matter power spectrum, there is additional functional dependence with scale, and this is called biasing. And so, if you don't understand this biasing, it will be hard to regain any information. So you need to understand how this biasing also depends with scale. And basically, we can use the EFT techniques to try to parameterize this scale dependence of bias. So basically, historically, this has been done where people just assume that, okay, let's assume that the halo over density will be a function of underlying dark matter density. Then you can just Taylor expand with some EFT coefficient now, some coefficients which can be thought of as an EFT coefficients. And very soon, people realize that this doesn't capture the full functional form. And basically, when you start to compute statistics like power spectrum and bispectrum, you see that this you cannot basically describe all of it with just these few parameters. And then the generalization of this was done by this McDonald and Roy, which basically fairly established a fairly general model, where they said, okay, it's not only that it can depend on the density, but it can also depend on other fields of dark matter, and basically whatever you can construct, right, the general operators like shear, for example, and then higher construction, derivative construction like this. And basically, you need to write down all of these kind of operators that symmetries allow, right, that are allowed by Galilean invariants. And also stochastic terms, right? Because now you're talking about some finite size objects. And with this, then you can try to model your halo statistics. In principle, there is also one additional component which is interesting, right? Yeah. So exactly. So on the other side, right? So. Because you have some halos typically form out of some region of Lagrange, which we call Lagrangian radius, right? So this is basically the region of space that collapsed into a halo, right? So you will in principle have also higher derivatives in this relative to this scale, right? And basically additional effect that comes into the game is that halos form over time, right? So you in principle the formation of halo is non-local effect in time. So you will basically, your biasing model needs to include that, where you basically integrate over the whole time your density, your dark matter fields, and then you have to trace them as dark matter flows, right? So basically this X flow is the coordinate, right, at a given position of the fluid element in time. So,
are these colons supposed to mean normal ordering, like in QFT? What's the meaning of the colons around this?
This?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just that you subtract out the mean.
Oh, okay.
So it's just, because basically they're just renormalizing the stochastic part or the background, right?
You have the
nomenclature,
it looks cooler.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so basically once you start to expand in perturbatively, right, then your order by order, you know how your density fields depend on time. It's basically just with powers of growth rates. And then you can formally integrate out this time dependence, and you will basically just redefine your EFT coefficients as basically they will just now contain some moments of growth rate with integrated over time. And but in principle now you will introduce more EFT coefficients because now each higher moment of growth rate will be in principle new bias coefficients. So now in principle, so we have studied this up to the third order of expansion. So we looked at statistics of two-point functions of halos and basically autocorrelations and cross correlations of data and matter, and three possible cross correlations and autocorrelations of bispectrum. So this altogether five statistics. So we are hoping that we have a lot of statistics to look at, right? And basically, in expanding of this we construct some bases. So there is a lot of degeneracies because of this terms that basically flow in time terms. But you can construct some basis, right, to keep track of all these degeneracies, and what you end up is with seven bias parameters for this five statistics. And now you need to calibrate, right? So there is another feature, right, that you have is basically these parameters are contour terms in EFT sense, so you can have a finite part and the basically contour part which handles your divergences in potential divergences in the perturbation theory. And basically with these seven parameters, so this is just for just one example, right, how these one statistics look like. So you have these bias parameters and then you have some functional forms evaluated in perturbation theory, and then similar holds for higher statistics, right? And then you can use these halos or basically simulations, and you can sort them by mass, right? You can think of them as different size objects, right? And you can correlate those, and you can then attack this data with your EFT model. And so here we basically determine the range or estimate the range where our model should work, and you can try to fit for this bias coefficients. And even though you have 7 bias coefficients, you have 5 statistics, and bias spectrum is a very rich statistic, right? It has basically two legs and an angle between them, so it's basically quite a rich function. So and then combining all these statistics, you see that in this range you can constrain this bias parameters quite well, right? So you can determine in which scale, range of scale, you can fit your statistics. Yeah, sorry.
So what are the pluses and minuses? Oh, okay, this is referring to the...
So this is basically as you add statistics, right? And so which statistics you add to the fit and how basically your chi-square and p-value changes with adding more and more statistics or excluding some, right?
So you're more than 50 at first and then get more reasonable fit.
Yeah. So here, I mean, you have 7 parameters and you have just 2 functions, right, that you fit. So you and then as you add bias spectrum, you're constraining it quite a lot, right? So.
Are you able to see whether there are degeneracies between parameters at the end of the fitting procedure, or do you know whether everything's constrained?
So this is actually something that we also wanted. So with this basis, we have constructed the basis, which is basically functionally it's a basis, right? So they are not degenerate, but you can still have some approximate degeneracies, right? And because these functions can be similar, and this so we have studied this, and we have noticed that we have the kind of a comment on that there is approximate degeneracy between 2 parameters, right? So we have studied all the combinations possible. And this should, in principle, I mean, can be investigated further and trying to do some, I don't know, principal component analysis and trying to optimize the problem even for this approximate degeneracies, right? But we have not done that in super detail. Okay.
Do you depend on
which K-bands
and estimate
by
each report?
So this was... Yeah, we had Raul Angulo, right, on the team. Was our simulation guy. He actually measured, right, the triangles of bi-spectrum, and that's how we compared, right, the effective field theory predictions to the...
But can you go back to the solid state?
So basically, these are then estimated the bias parameters, right? And just one comment, right? That, I mean, once you estimate this from a fits, right? You see that they're all order 1 as you would expect, right? So there are no weird large small values that would cancel out. And basically, this is a p-value plot, which basically shows you how far in K, so basically this is K max and this P value, so it represents how well you're fitting, right? And basically shows that up to the scale where you expect, right, to fit, then you fit well, and then all of a sudden your P value drops, right? So these are mass bins, right? So these are basically different halo types. So we had actually 4 different mass bins to cross check our results, right? Okay.
Or is bin 0?
So this is bias 1.
I mean, you usually in a simulation, even if you take the smallest halos that you resolve, the bias is larger than 1.
Not really, right? I mean, typically.
You can get bias better if you have a small one. Oh, yeah, no, but in practice, do a reasonably large box, you're not going to be able to resolve it. That's a pretty...
Well,
eventually the bias comes down to 1, but it's a pretty tiny halo mass.
It kind of depends on the... count of number of particles and stuff like that. But so I typically with simulations I've worked with, I've worked with a couple, there was always a people always show the bias one, right? This was the smallest type of halos they had. And yeah, the largest bin 4 goes up to, I don't know, 3, right? B1 equals 3. I mean, I can check what actual mass sizes of these halos are. So I have it in the field. So, okay, so just to show, say, the plot. So this is the comparison of the data, basically the ratio of the simulation data compared to the EFT prediction now. And again, this is similar to these power spectrum plots that for dark matter, this one we have been showing earlier. So basically, after the scales of 0.2, where you would expect, right, perturbation theory to work, it works, and then it starts to fail. And then in similar, basically for the bispectrum, just know that bispectrum is basically a three-level computation, right? And again, you kind of are doing well up to the scales where you would expect it, and then as you approach the nonlinear scales, your result start to differ, right, from simulations. Okay, just a quick note on non-Gaussianity. So we have studied, right, so all this has been so far done with Gaussian initial conditions. If you want to start non-Gaussianities, which are interesting from inflationary point of view, right, you can change your initial conditions to, in addition to the Gaussian component, to have some kind of non-Gaussian components. And this would introduce eventually to your halo over density new bias parameters, right, where now the interesting or kind of a crucial feature is that your basically potential, right, is evaluated only at the initial time, right, and then just you have a flow due to the gravity, and then other bias coefficients are just so, and other bias coefficients are just given with this kind of expansion. And this is recently also been revisited in this paper of Asazi. And another feature is that once you actually start to want to approach the survey, right, you might also start to worry about baryonic effects. And you can add these components as well. So this will again mean additional bias coefficients in your halo over density, right, where you will now have the baryonic density and relative velocity effects as well, right? And again, these are also have to be evaluated in the flow in time. Okay, so these are just conclusions, and basically we have studied the dark matter, the effective field theory and its effects on dark matter clustering in Lagrangian framework. We have looked at the effects on the baryon acoustic oscillations, and we have also seen that there are interesting approaches that you can use for matching the effective field theory or perturbative approaches from large scales, and some halo modeling from small scales in order to model the wide range of scales. We have constructed the effective field theory for bias tracers in order to use it for galaxy surveys. And this is typically the expansion in K over KNL and K over KM, which KNL is just the nonlinear scale and KM is the Lagrangian radius. This works well up to this mildly nonlinear scales, and with this, 7 different parameters, we are able to model quite a rich assemble of statistics. Okay, and I just leave you with some outlook, so you can add all these other components of physical effects that we have mentioned in the beginning, like redshift space distortions, non-Gaussianities, baryonic effect. You can look at GR effects, right? So the framework is able to handle all of this, right? Thank you.
Didn't show the data.
So measurements I
didn't show. Yeah.
So measurements from surveys I didn't show because we didn't. But so the data we used is always from simulations, right? Yeah.
So what about the data if you fit the wiggle?
So I mean, as far as I know, right, people people in, say, BOSS surveys, right, ADSS, they have measured wiggles quite well, right, with far simpler models than ours. And the wiggles have been measured quite successfully. They're even used, right, for constraining cosmological parameters.
You have to put in a wiggle function to do the calculations.
Sorry?
You have to put in a wiggle function to calculate the matrices because of the data is in the past.
Sure, yes.
And I'm just wondering about, I can talk to you.
Sure.
I have a question about.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, on top of that, you would need to convolve all this with the window functions, right? All these results with the window for a particular survey, right?
No, no. They're using QFT, so tree graphs are the classical part of the protocol. The wiggles involve, these are the quantum effects of QFT.
Mm-hmm.
So where is the quantum? This is a naive question.
So this is no, there is no quantum, right? Loops are basically just field theory methods, right? How to solve field theory perturbatively. So there's no need to involve any quantum effects, right? This is classical field theory, but you can still write Feynman diagrams and do loops and all the stuff. Yeah, here are just some, you're integrating over momenta, right? What's in the loop is basically momentum, over the momentum.
It's just perturbation theory.
Yes. And you have all the features of field theory, even though it's classical, and renormalizations and loops and stuff like that, right? Yes?
I may have missed it, but is there an ECPU software package that those of us who just want to use it as a tool can download and run?
For what? For
EZEFT or whatever you want to call it.
well, I know that there has been plans to develop stuff like that, but I mean, as you've seen, right, field is still lively, right, and there are still results and debates, for example, even for the just dark matter, where what the nonlinear scale actually is and up to where you can fit and up to where you should be able to fit and how many bias counter terms you actually need at the given order. But so there are online some codes I can show you for computing loops, basically. This is the hard part, right? So basically one loop, two loop. And once you have that, these counter terms are always of the simpler functional form. So you can easily modify these codes to compute, say, counter terms and stuff like that. So for Lagrangian perturbation theory results that I've been showing, I even forgot. So we have built a public code. It's just one loop code, but it's public. It can be, it's on a GitHub. It can be downloaded, right?
It's on GitHub somewhere. I can Google it.
Yeah. But it's one loop, right? It doesn't have two loops.
We always put the next best one on. You know what I mean? Not the current thing. The previous version goes public, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So is there actually a comparison somewhere that you can actually compare the Halo model to the EFT and see where? Like I said, it's all either this or that. I've never seen a comparison. I guess you were showing me, but it wasn't quite clear there.
Well, there was no like just the normal Halo model, right?
So I mean, what is your take on that? Is there if I can compare Halo model head to because the Halo model has some fitting parameters in it that you fit to simulation, and then so does EFT. After that, I mean, which one is better?
Well, I mean, there are different scales, right? Where are they? So, Halo model should become.
The Halo model would work much better on a small scale, that, you know, but even on larger scales.
It's not good, right?
But is there a comparison somewhere that we can see that it's not good?
I'm sure, yeah, there are papers that show how one. I mean, even like a review paper from early 2000s of Ravi Seth. Should have this.
But they don't have EFT there.
No, they don't have EFT, but yeah, you can compare it. I don't think there is a paper that shows both at the same plot. At least I'm not aware of it.
The EFT is if you UV ultraviolet completion or off.
Mm-hmm.
You put in a cutoff, you get blue ultraviolet. What is the cutoff? How do you choose it?
So here basically you have this counter terms, right, which are basically supposed to take into account. Yes, so here, I mean, it's so because of the initial power spectrum, this one loop and two loop integrals are actually convergent, right, by themselves. This doesn't mean that they don't need counterterms, right, and they don't need to be renormalized, though. Yeah. So for different initial conditions, you might need a cutoff, and then yeah, then for given cutoff, your counterterm, right, would you would have scale dependence, which would be canceled from the counterterms, right? These integrals are actually convergent,
so
right?
So you're finite renormalizing perturbations, even with finite, if you compare contributions. That's right. So you don't have an ultraviolet complete problem.
Well, it might happen, right? If you go to higher loops, right? You might.
You could also choose an initial power spectrum that.
Yeah, you could choose.
Makes the loop diagrams converge in our recursion theory, but the simulation is perfectly well behaved.
Yes.
So it's a nice fit theory.
Well, in that respect, yes. So it has an interesting feature that it's non-local in time, right? And so this is a unusual, right, aspect of it, but it's still not a problem. It because you know how order by order you have this growth function, so it kind of gives you more EFT coefficients, right, than local in time would, but still it's handleable, right? It's
Borel sum.
Oh yeah.
Since it's for a long time, we should say further questions village. So thanks for coming over time.
Thank you.